Man of Destiny. We invite you to listen to a program of tribute to the late Dr. H.F. Vervoet.
Oh, fallen at length, that tower of strength, which stood four square to all the winds that blew.
Regard this man, called upon to give direction to his land in a world where in a few brief years the history of centuries is being rewritten.
Only when upheld by the blessing of the Almighty and the confidence of his people can a leader give of his best, physically and spiritually, every moment of his life. In this spirit, I dedicate myself to my country, South Africa.
These were the words with which Hendrik Vervoet, on September the 3rd, 1958, accepted office as the 6th Prime Minister of South Africa. But see him first as Minister of Bantu Affairs, the architect of a South Africa where together, white and non-white, could each build their own future. The man who gave substance to the vision of separate freedoms for the different peoples within our national borders.
But it is not only the white man in South Africa who claims as an inalienable right that his nation must be permitted to survive and to retain its own distinctive identity, its own culture and institutions. The black man is equally intent upon safeguarding the national heritages of each of his different nations. The South African government has, in the light of all this, chosen the only alternative, namely the self-realization to the utmost extent possible for each group. This means that it is willing to grant to the Bantu nations of South Africa the opportunity to work out their own destinies, just as this was desired by and granted to new states in other parts of Africa and Asia.
As a Zulu, this is how I saw it. I found confidence in Dr. Vervoet first when he organized the removal of the slums, when he placed the Bantu in their own respectable townships and gave them an opportunity to make their own livings there. Today, I have my own business there. The progress that we Bantus have made was a living proof for us of his integrity.
On one occasion, he said, development and culture cannot be given to a community as a ready-made product. The community must achieve it by their own efforts, by working at it heart and soul, day by day.
He loved his own nation deeply, and so he had a great respect for other nations, and for us also, the Bantu.
His answer to the reproach that there was no contact with the Bantu people was himself to move among them and to talk with them in every Bantu territory, in every Bantu township in Zululand, in East and West Transvaal, from the Limpopo to the Transkei, and even in Southwest Africa. There is no single Bantu area that he did not visit, no single responsible Bantu leader to whom he did not patiently listen.
I often traveled with him on official visits, and I shall always remember one particular incident. It was on the 26th of July, 1955. We were on our way back in the plane after a very exhausting visit to Southwest Africa. We traveled throughout the length and breadth of that vast territory and visited every single native area. He listened to everyone who wished to see him and listened patiently. In the plane, he leaned back exhausted, and then Mrs. Verwoerd loosened his tie, took his shoes off, and put both his feet on her lap and stroked them gently. Completely relaxed, he was able to fall asleep. This was the sort of relationship that existed between this man and his noble wife.
September the 3rd, 1958. Dr. H.F. Verwoerd is called as leader of South Africa, her sixth prime minister.
No one is more conscious than I am of the heavy responsibility that has been placed upon my shoulders. Times are serious, and there are tremendous stirrings among the nations. The problems of our country are becoming more involved and are being disturbed by ignorance, interference, and clashes of interest. There are ideals which have to be fulfilled. World trends, economic and otherwise, must be taken into account. Yet I accept my task cheerfully and with firm faith.
He must discharge his task against the mighty storms of uncontrollable world events, against the attacks on his country, which, since the Second World War, have been growing ever more intense.
South Africa is a threat to world peace.
The white man in South Africa
is a threat to world peace.
Africa for the Africans!
Africa for the Africans!
Africa for the Africans!
We must force a break between the West and its only stronghold in Africa, South Africa.
The 4th of February, 1960, Cape Town. An address to both Houses of Parliament.
The wind of change is blowing through this continent. And whether we like it or not, this growth of national consciousness is a political fact. And we must all accept it as a fact. And our national policies must take account of it. As a fellow member of the Commonwealth, we always try, and I think we have succeeded, in giving to South Africa our full support and encouragement. But I hope you will not mind me saying frankly that there are some aspects of your policies which make it impossible for us to do this without being false to our own deep convictions about political destinies of free men, to which in our own territories we are trying to give effect.
The need to do justice to all does not only mean being just to the black man of Africa, but also to be just to the white man of Africa. They are the people who brought civilization here, who made possible the present development of black nationalism by bringing the native education, by bringing to Africa industry and development, by inspiring them with the ideals which Western civilization has developed for itself. We have a stake here. This is our only motherland. We settled a country which was bare. The Bantu also settled certain portions for themselves. We believe in providing those rights for those people in the fullest degree, in that part of Africa which their forefathers found for themselves and settled in. But we also believe in balance. We believe in allowing exactly those same full opportunities to remain within the grasp of the white man in the areas he settled. The white man has made all this possible. We are white, but we are in Africa.
The 20th of January, 1960. 4 o'clock in the afternoon in the House of Assembly in Cape Town. There comes from the Prime Minister, unexpectedly, an historic announcement. The next problem, he declares, that falls within the realm of practical politics is the establishment of a republic. Therefore, he says, the question will be put to the people by means of a referendum. The issue will be decided by a simple majority.
The time is indeed more than ripe for launching the republic. In view of what is happening elsewhere in Africa, it has become increasingly clear that we need that unity which alone will give the strength which is indispensable.
April the 9th, 1960. A bright, sunlit day in Johannesburg. Crowds of carefree people at the Rentmeester show. It's being opened by the Prime Minister. He speaks and is silenced. The first attempt has been made on his life. The silence falls upon the multitude about him and across his country. The people in cities, in villages, on the farms of South Africa share with him the struggle which follows, and miraculously he recovers. Restored to health, his dedication reinforced, he speaks again.
Suddenly, during this past year, in view of many developments, the atmosphere has totally changed, and the Afrikaans-speaking people of South Africa stretch out the hand of friendship to their English-speaking fellow citizens in acceptance of these conditions. The conditions they had formally set out for their willingness to aid in the fulfillment of this, the dearest ideal of the Afrikaner people of South Africa. And the only means by which full and real unity, which is strength to us all, can be brought about. All that was demanded from the one side, all that was demanded from the Afrikaans-speaking side, is being offered. Now, the great chance is there for English-speaking South Africa. If our English-speaking citizens throw in their weight to reconstruct the Union into such a republic, a kind of republic they had formally accepted, there will be such rejoicing, such deep feeling of unity and common nationhood, that the result in all spheres of life will be immeasurable.
The final voting in the Republic referendum is as follows. For a Republic, 849,958. Against a Republic, 775,878. Majority for a Republic, 74,080.
Rejoicing falls away. A hush falls on the land as the people of South Africa wait anxiously. It is March 1961. In London, at the Commonwealth Conference, Dr. Favart confronts those who would destroy all that through 300 years and more South Africa has achieved. A decision must be taken that touches at the heart of this country and all its people. For this man of integrity, there is no place for expedient compromise. He chooses the lonely, but the honorable course. The only one that can secure South Africa's self-respect.
To judge the morality of a policy, it must be remembered that in all ethics, a balance must be struck between different values, different rights. Absolute right for the one may mean tremendous injustice to the other. Theorists and those who far away can remain unaffected themselves philosophize gladly on the handing over of what is the possession of others. They expect the white South African to give away gradually his country and his possessions, and indeed ultimately his whole nationhood and existence, knowing full well that after the first step the pace will become uncontrollable. Where does morality come in if this is demanded? Both the honor of South Africa and the practical considerations involved for South Africa made the decision inevitable that we should withdraw the indication of our desire to retain membership.
He taught us not to be afraid to stand alone. Today we know that the road out of the Commonwealth was one we were destined to take to reach greater national unity, greater strength, and greater prosperity. Under his guidance, a new republic was born.
In humble submission to Almighty God, who controls the destinies of nations and the history of peoples, who gathered our forebears together from many lands, and gave them this their own, who has guided them from generation to generation, who has wondrously delivered them from the dangers that beset them, we, who are here in Parliament assembled, declare that whereas we are conscious of our responsibility towards God and man, are convinced of the necessity to stand united, to safeguard the integrity and freedom of our country, to secure the maintenance of law and order, to further the contentment and spiritual and material welfare of all in our midst, are prepared to accept our duty to seek world peace in association with all peace-loving nations, and are charged with the task of founding the Republic of South Africa.
The 31st of May, 1961. In the historic church in Bosman Street, Pretoria, the first state president of the Republic of South Africa takes his oath of loyalty.
Om die teenwoordigheid van die almagtige God en in die volle besef van die hoë roeping wat ek as staatspresident in diens van my volk aanvaar, sweer ek Charles Roberts Swart trou aan die Republiek van Suid-Afrika. May the Almighty, by His grace, guide and sustain me in keeping this oath with honor and dignity. Mag die Almagtige in sy genade my lei en onderskraag om hierdie eed met eer en waardigheid na te kom. So help my God.
It was a joyous day. It was the final triumph after the long journey of strife and division. But as he said, the fulfilling of ideals is never the end, for after each completed task, there waits a new beginning, another challenge. Many believed that we did not really mean to lead to freedom the Bantu people of our land until, in Parliament, on the 23rd of January, 1962, again an historic moment broke.
the government will be prepared to grant the Transkei a new constitution, which will create a parliament and a cabinet of ministers for that territory based on the principles of Western democracy. In consultation with the Bantu leaders of the Transkei, the details of the constitution will be worked out, including to whom the franchise shall be given and how it shall be exercised and how its parliament shall be constituted. It will be a wholly black parliament and cabinet.
Chief Maranzima, I have an important announcement to make to you. I have been informed that the Prime Minister, the Honourable Dr. Babut, announced in Parliament today the Transkei will have a wholly black parliament and a cabinet. The powers entrusted to this parliament are substantial and will be increased. Presumably the Transkei in Parliament will take control over agriculture, education, health, welfare services, roads, etc. And these will be placed under Bantu jurisdiction forthwith. It is hoped that consultation on the constitution will be completed in time to have the new system in operation during the first half of 1963. Political development, however, must be accompanied by economic development on a substantial scale. I wish you, the chiefs, headmen, and people of the Transkei, success in this great new venture. I would like to give you the assurance that I and my officials will do all in our power to help you in the difficult years that lie ahead. May God bless you and your people and give you guidance and courage to maintain peace and happiness in the Transkei.
To the people of the Transkei, wherever they are, the Prime Minister's statement is highly welcome and will be received with excitement. It is significant of the policy enunciated 7 years ago, and the stage that has been attained reflects the honesty of the government.
The Bantu people of his own country were beginning to accept his policy. But from the outside world, the challenge continued unremittingly. South Africa is challenged in the highest tribunal in the world. On April the 15th, 1961, Ethiopia and Liberia, acting on behalf of the Organization of African Unity, bring 5 main charges against South Africa at the International Court of Justice at The Hague.
Our charge is that the League of Nations mandate over Southwest Africa is still in force, that Pretoria is accountable for the administration of the territory to the United Nations, that South Africa's policy of separate development violates her obligation to promote to the utmost the well-being and progress of Southwest Africa's people, that military bases have been established in the territory, that Pretoria has attempted unilaterally to incorporate Southwest Africa.
That was the challenge. And as always, when the justice of his policy was called into question, Dr. Verwoerd replied, in his own parliament, at Commonwealth conferences, at the United Nations, and now at the World Court. The opportunity to defend the policy before a bench of international judges was offered, and he took it. He assembled a brilliant team of lawyers and researchers. Detailed evidence on every aspect of the life of Southwest Africa was submitted to the court. So overwhelming was the case presented by South Africa that Ethiopia and Liberia withdrew their charge that apartheid is oppressive, either in intent or effect. They then relied solely on the contention that apartheid violates some ill-defined international norm. And then, on July the 18th last, the final vindication. The court finds that Ethiopia and Liberia had no right to bring the case.
In the light of these various considerations, the court finds that the applicants cannot be considered to have established any legal right or interest appertaining to them in the subject matter of the present claims, and that accordingly the court must decline to give effect to them. For these reasons, the court, by the president's casting vote, the votes being equally divided, decides to reject the claims of the Empire of the Republic of Liberia.
Relief and gratitude well up in the heart of his nation, among the Afrikaans and English-speaking people, and the Bantu. Here's a church leader.
None who pauses to reflect over the victory will not acknowledge that the hand of God directed the battle. The nation's heart, after long suspense and anxiety, overflows with thanksgiving. We pray without ceasing, not forgetting to thank and praise the Lord for prayers answered and delivering you from evil.
A housewife.
I felt proud of the leadership and example set by you personally to the people of this country.
An angler from the Cape.
The hate campaign against us has received a defeat which will take some time to recover. The prayers of my wife and myself have been wonderfully answered.
An Afrikaans Free State wool farmer.
Ons innige dank aan die almagtige regter vir sy leiding. Bravo vir ons regspan. Sterkte word u toegewens. Ons gebede is verhoor.
A retired Indian Army captain.
We've been awaiting the verdict with trepidation, and the news today has come as one joyful episode in several months of despondency over affairs in England.
A Bantu church leader.
Heartily congratulate government and legal team on victory at Hague World Court.
A Free State magistrate.
Congratulations on the glorious worldwide success in your efforts before the World Court.
An immigrant living in Johannesburg.
Warmest congratulations from my wife and myself for the wonderful and peaceful victory you and your government have won at The Hague. With all our heart, we wish you long life to continue to lead the country of our adoption.
The father of an Ilovo family.
Your speech tonight came from your heart and was Christian. You gave a stern but friendly warning to those countries and people who wish to cut our happiness. They shall not succeed in creating another Vietnam in our beloved country.
He himself said,
in conclusion, I wish to state that though the judgment clearly gives us, as a nation, cause for gratitude, and while it will be accepted by many as an answer to their prayers, South Africans will not regard it as an opportunity to crow over opponents. We would rather see in it an inducement to devote ourselves anew to the guardianship which we accepted in respect of the lesser developed peoples of South and Southwest Africa.
Others had prepared the way, but it was H.F. Favot who gave practical realization to an ideal deeply interwoven into the character of his people, distilling it into clarity. In the Republic, of which he was the architect, new and deeper meaning was given to the concepts of national unity, national pride, dedication, patriotism. The realization of this must have given him one of the most wonderful moments of his life on the evening of May the 31st, 1966, the fifth anniversary of the Republic, when, at the Fort Trekker Monument, he had his last direct experience of the warm affection of his people.
that we are. Even if young, a nation in South Africa. That we all belong to that nation. That with pride we may say, this is our country, the country of all of us. Five years is an extremely short time for so strong a feeling to grow after the differences we had before. And the amazing fact of life today is not that there are some who as yet cannot accommodate themselves to this new era, but that so many can.
Suddenly, in the moments before death stepped in, his vision of a commonwealth of South African states, neighbors living in friendship and self-determination, suddenly took life. The vision glowed into reality. For exactly a week ago today, the first meeting took place between him and a black premier, the Prime Minister of Basutoland. It marked the beginning of the development of a new dimension in relations between white and black in South Africa. And now, he's gone. The man who put South Africa on the path to honest thinking about race relations, who by his example and his actions fostered mutual respect between the peoples of our country, who straddled and bridged like a colossus the gap between the Afrikaans and the English-speaking, who, as an upright Afrikaner, won the trust of the English-speaking for the Afrikaner, and, as a personification of Afrikaner aspiration, gave the Afrikaans-speaking the inner strength with which to exorcise baseless suspicion. The man under whose leadership that great civilization in which South Africa shares was spreading north into Africa from the south for the first time. The man who is that civilization's most forceful leader and sustainer. For he cannot die. His thoughts and deeds live on. For generations to come, resounding down the years, his voice will be heard.
National unity will remain an empty term if it does not express itself in a common patriotism and the readiness to serve country and nation, each person in his own walk of life, or to make sacrifices for this whenever necessary.
Thank you.
That was Man of Destiny, a tribute on the death of the Prime Minister, written by Douglas Fuchs.